Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as 2010 gets underway, everyone is wondering what's next for the economy. And many people are wondering, is manufacturing dying in America and in the New York area? We will try to get some answers on both questions now from four guests. Our first two are the editor and a contributor to a new book by the progressive New York think tank, the Drum Major Institute, which comes from being a drum major for justice, a Martin Luther King phrase. It's called What's Next for New York City's Economy. Dan Morris from the DMI is co-editor of the book. Adam Friedman, director of the Pratt Center for Community Development, wrote the chapter on manufacturing in New York. So welcome to both of you. Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, Brian.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Adam, give us a little manufacturing history. Was there a heyday of manufacturing in New York City?
Sure. During the in 1960, there were about a million manufacturing jobs in New York City. Absolutely everything was produced here. At one point, automobiles were produced here. Now there are about 100,000 manufacturing jobs, but what's remained is incredibly vibrant, shows incredible vitality, and you started off by asking, is manufacturing dying? The answer is no, it need not be so.
It need not be so, but to what degree has manufacturing disappeared? You started to give some numbers. Flesh that out for us a little bit more. How suddenly, how gradually, what left, what's still here?
Well, there was a dramatic transformation in our economy, and a lot of that loss was inevitable. And the transformation had to do with globalization, both around transportation and communications. You could commute, people, businesses could communicate anywhere in the world, and they could move product relatively cheaply anywhere in the world. We're leaving that era. I mean, what's going on now, if you look at, you've asked about history, if you think about the dawn of time, energy was provided by people and animals. Then after that, the next phase was burning things, right? Burning plants, burning oil, burning other materials. Now we're transitioning to what might be called Society 3.0, which is a low-carbon economy, and that's going to impact dramatically on how we make things and how we move things. And that's what really gives us hope for a revitalized manufacturing sector in New York City.
Listeners, do you work in manufacturing now anywhere in the New York City area? Or if you're listening elsewhere, do you work in manufacturing? Is the death of manufacturing in America being greatly exaggerated? 212-433-WNYC, or maybe you used to work in manufacturing and there are no such jobs anymore in the field in which you worked, or anyone else with a thought about this, locally or nationally. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Dan Morris from the Drum Major Institute, one of the overarching themes of your book through all the chapters is that government can decide whether this is a time of economic vulnerability or a time of economic security. Do you think it's even in government's power to engineer a rebirth of manufacturing in New York City, given the global market forces that Adam was just referring to that are pulling it away?
Absolutely. I mean, I think Adam makes a remarkably persuasive and compelling case about how and why government and government alone is so well positioned to do this. And I should say that at a time of fiscal crisis or even emergency, so much of what can and should be done isn't necessarily so cost prohibitive or cost intensive. So Adam, for example, and I'm sure he'll want to weigh in a moment or two on this, looks at a variety of proposals and ideas for how to radically rethink the way that we zone land and different parts of the city here to enable more kind of smaller niche manufacturing firms. We're not talking about the smokestacks of decades ago. Smaller, cutting edge, green firms that could be creating high wage, long-term jobs in different parts of the city.
What are these jobs? You both referred to green-collar jobs as a manufacturing sector of the future. Dan, you want to follow up on what you just said and talk about the kinds of jobs that you're talking about? Because people may not have such a specific idea.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think, again, it depends on which industry you're talking about, and what sort of work we're describing. But look at, you know, recent legislation that moved forward here in New York City in terms of green construction and looking at different practices and procedures that would be done on buildings across the city to bring them up to code, to move forward a really bold and ambitious citywide energy efficiency standard. Now, this is work that needs to be done that, to Adam's point, is absolutely going to help bring our economy kind of into the future. But that, again, you know, looking at sort of average salaries and benefits and sort of the overall positive impact of various manufacturing and industrial jobs, I mean, this is the right way to move forward. And again, government can do this.
And Adam Friedman from Pratt, do you want to go further on what some of those specific green-collar industries here might be, or talk about the zoning that Dan mentioned? I mean, Mayor Bloomberg has rezoned practically the whole city in his 8 years. Has he done it the wrong way, in your opinion, with respect to encouraging this manufacturing?
A couple of things. He's rezoned about 20 million square feet of industrial space. And if you were to go around to the industrial parks and look at the vacancy rates, across the board, the vacancy rate is under 5% now. So industrial space is very tight. You know, to go back to the premise, though, of sort of is manufacturing
and
dying?
What does that mean, that it's very tight? Does that mean that there's demand and it's all full, or does that mean that it's not being used?
No, it means that there's very strong demand and it's full. And if you, for example, go to the Brooklyn Navy Yard, they have, which is a unique city-owned facility, they have a very ambitious building campaign going on now to create more industrial space.
And I know you're on the board of that Brooklyn Navy Yard Development Corporation. And, in fact, we have a caller. Let's take this caller because he may be relevant exactly to this. Bill, who says he's calling from the Brooklyn Navy Yard. Bill, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. How are you doing? Thank you for having my call.
Thank you.
I was calling. Yes, we are at the Navy Yard, and outstanding opportunities here for space. But we still find, we do small manufacturing of industrial design and furniture. We find that anywhere in New York City and the tri-state area, still, taxes, insurance, healthcare, all that good stuff. It adds up to a man hour that just it still stifles us, and it's always an education process with clients trying to explain why something is $1,000 versus $100 when things look very similar when they come off of the ship.
So Bill, are you tempted to take your business and move to Alabama or Mexico or Shanghai?
Well, we look at it all the time, and it's just a reality of the business, but we try very hard not to become commoditized, and by remaining unique and offering a product that can't be manufactured or can't be copied and made elsewhere, that's how we try to stay here.
Why are you doing business in New York?
This is our home. This is where we live. I like to deal with people who are local. It's much more enjoyable to interact on a personal level than within the city that you live.
Because your customers are here, or because you're from here?
We're from here.
Yeah. So, Dan, I imagine lowering taxes and regulations and bureaucracy are not the first things on DMI's agenda list. So how do you and Bill connect here, or don't you?
Well, again, I mean, I think it's a question of having the right approach to policy, and I should say that understanding the future of industrial work and even of manufacturing in the city is absolutely on the radar screen of City Hall. So, for example, at the EDC, at the City's Economic Development Corporation, they have an RFP out, which was announced a few days ago. Didn't get a lot of attention for this massive, massive space in Sunset Park, right there in the kind of industrial waterfront. And it will hopefully become a great source of economic activity and new jobs. But the question becomes, for whom and who will benefit? So absent, for example, a really robust citywide living wage standard, we wouldn't necessarily see the kind of positive benefits and impacts for struggling New Yorkers, those who are really looking for good quality jobs, that we really should be seeing. So I think it's a question of really looking at the right kinds of policy maneuvers and decisions that need to be made to ensure that economic benefits and opportunities redound to everyone, but especially to those who are most vulnerable.
So, Bill, at the Brooklyn Navy Yard, as owner of a small manufacturing business, when you hear a progressive group like Drum Major Institute leading the charge for a living wage higher than the current minimum wage, or to have a paid sick days campaign to guarantee all workers paid sick days, do you feel that they're working to keep you here or to drive you away, or neither?
I think that's a complicated issue, and from our perspective, it's more it's more of the need for incentives for small business, and those incentives, in my mind, are tax related. Sorry, that's as far as I can comment on
okay,
that.
Okay, Bill, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. Adam Friedman from Pratt.
Yeah, I would say that one of the reasons why we want to keep our manufacturers here is because they already pay so well. You know, average production wage in the city is over $50,000. So while we certainly need to have a living wage provisions incorporated into our economic development programming, I think in general manufacturing is already exceeding that. And Bill touched on some really important things in describing his business. He is exactly the type of high value-added business that characterizes New York City's remaining manufacturing sector. They pay well. There's a very strong design element. They're very connected to their market. They're responsible. They're responding very quickly to their market. That's the core of manufacturing in New York City today. And because of that high design element, it's a very skilled labor force, and they're already paying pretty well.
My guest on WNYC for another few minutes, Dan Morris from the Drum Major Institute, the editor of From Disaster to Diversity, What's Next for New York City's Economy, and one of the contributors to the book, Adam Friedman, who is from the Pratt Center. He's the director of the Pratt Center for Community Development. He wrote the chapter in this book on manufacturing in New York. And Dan, you wanted to say?
Sure. Yeah, I just wanted to jump in and say that actually when we have more of a commitment to this high-value-added, high-paying work, as Adam just describes so rightly, it's actually good for business. Why? Because it reduces the tax burden. And in the following sense, you have fewer people relying upon city services that typically are described as public assistance. This is actually something to keep in mind. So the idea that progressives who are quote-unquote pro-labor and folks who are pro-business, that they need to be so far apart, this is actually a myth, that there, in fact, are ways for us to very much come together and move forward a bold economic agenda.
And we'll hear more about whether they can come together from two other guests coming up in a few minutes who come from the business sector and the labor sector. But Nick in Plainfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
I'm okay. Thanks for calling.
Listen, I just thought I'd open up with a little anecdote. Like the truckers who I know, they often refer to New York City as the end of the earth because everything goes in, nothing comes out. And therefore, it increases the cost significantly for anybody who buys anything in New York. So I think things, the grandioso big plans that are being talked about would probably be better brought down to more of a rudimentary level of an entrepreneurial level. Build up small business against small unique manufacturing than to try to build some huge place and get everybody get all the high-end rollers in there, you know?
I know. And I think that's a very relevant comment to what Adam Friedman is doing at the Brooklyn Navy Yard on the board of their development corporation, because as I understand what's going on at the Navy Yard, Adam, tell me if this is right, is that it's really mostly for small niche manufacturers with very few jobs apiece, but trying to build up at that kind of grassroots entrepreneurial level. Is that correct?
That's completely true. And that really is or should be the strategy for New York City. The Brooklyn Navy Yard now has well over 400 small manufacturing tenants. And because of their size, they are nimble. They are able to adapt to their changing market. And what Nick is getting at, the contrast with the high rollers, is exactly the right economic development strategy of encouraging a diverse economic base.
How many of the Brooklyn Navy Yard 400, though, are subsidized by government?
I'm not sure how to answer that because I'm tempted to say no, none.
None?
The Navy Yard charges market rate rentals.
Oh, I thought there was government subsidy in a lot of those seed businesses. No,
this is really a critical question. They charge market rate rents, but what they also do is provide stability. That's an area that's not going to be converted as a result of a zoning change. It is the Navy Yard, and their mission is to promote industrial uses and job creation. So it shows the importance of land use stability to economic development and fostering a diverse economic base.
Dan Morris, before you go, why does manufacturing matter? And how does this fit in to your group's larger agenda, the overarching themes of your book? Because maybe today's unskilled labor, if that's the right term to use, is in tourism or the service sector. And maybe that's okay. Maybe that's no worse than working on an assembly line as a machinist. Not that that's unskilled, but people could learn on the job a lot of the old manufacturing skills. So is it somehow worse? Why does it matter?
Well, it matters for a number of reasons, but I think for us most notably, it's because historically we know that manufacturing and industrial trades really created some of the most robust and durable pathways to the middle class. So this has a lot to do, of course, with the history of the labor movement and of unionized sectors and trades in this country. And as a policy organization that, yes, is progressive, we at DMI have long been focused on ways of strengthening and expanding the middle class. So a commitment to creative, entrepreneurial, manufacturing, and new forms of industrial work when properly unionized and supported, et cetera, is absolutely critical to the future of the middle class. And I will say, Brian, that as for other sectors and other industries, I mean, in no way do I want to devalue or demean other forms of work and labor, but we have seen that a number of fields in the service sector, quote-unquote, are consistently paying low wages and not enabling people who are really vulnerable and lower income to enter the middle class. And that has to do with all sorts of reasons related to waning support for labor and other kind of political considerations. But it really is something to keep in mind.
Dan Morris from the Drum Major Institute for Public Policy, co-editor with Jonathan Hicks of From Disaster to Diversity, What's Next for New York City's Economy, and Adam Friedman from Pratt, a contributor to the book on manufacturing. Adam, go ahead and take last 20 seconds.
I was going to say, in addition to providing high-quality employment, it's important to the sustainability of the city to maintain a strong manufacturing sector. If we want to encourage increased recycling, we have to do something with those materials. If we want to reduce the carbon footprint caused by emissions from trucking, we have to get trucks off the road. And a lot of that is going to have to do with being able to produce locally, having the point of production coincide with the point of consumption.
All right. Thank you both very much for coming on. And when we continue in a minute, we will hear a call for saving the national economy through a major reindustrialization effort, something we don't hear coming out of Washington. Stay with us.